And now, on Radio 2, we present an anthology of words and music for Christmas Eve, the night before Christmas.
In those days, that there went out a decree from Caesar Augustus that all the world should be taxed, and all went to be taxed, every one into his own city. And Joseph also went up from Galilee with Mary, his espoused wife, being great with child. And so it was that while they were there, the days were accomplished that she should be delivered. And she brought forth her firstborn son and laid him in a manger, because there was no room in the inn. And there were in the same country shepherds abiding in the field, keeping watch over their flock by night. And lo, the angel of the Lord came upon them, and they were sore afraid. And the angel said unto them, Fear not, for behold, I bring you good tidings of great joy. For unto you is born this day in the city of David a Saviour, which is Christ the Lord. Ye shall find the babe wrapped in swaddling clothes, lying in a manger. And suddenly there was with the angel a multitude of the heavenly host praising God and saying, Glory to God in the highest, and on earth peace, goodwill toward men.
Thank you. sitting under the mistletoe, pale green fairy mistletoe, one last candle burning low, all the sleepy dancers gone, just one candle burning on, shadows lurking everywhere. Someone came and kissed me there. Tired I was. My head would go nodding under the mistletoe. Pale green fairy mistletoe. No footstep came, no voice, but only just as I sat there, sleepy, lonely, stooped in the still and shadowy air, lips unseen, and kissed me there.
Christmas Carol by Charles Dickens.
Christmas is coming, the goose is getting fat. We've got a penny in the old man's hat. If you haven't got a penny, an eight will do. If you haven't got an eight, long bless you.
Christ our Son, He came with all upon this time, to save us all from sight and foul, when we were all astray. All God is our God, and good, Once upon a time, on Christmas Eve, old Scrooge sat busy in his counting house. It was cold, bleak, biting weather, foggy withal. The door of Scrooge's counting house was open, that he might keep his eye upon his clock, when a dismal little cell beyond, a sort of tank, was copying letters. Scrooge had a very small fire, but the clerk's fire was so very much smaller that he put on his white comforter and tried to warm himself at the candle.
A Merry Christmas, Uncle!
It was the voice of Scrooge's nephew.
A Merry Christmas, Uncle. God save you.
Yeah, humbug.
Christmas, a humbug?
Yeah.
You don't mean that, I'm sure.
I do. Merry Christmas. Every idiot who goes about with Merry Christmas on his lips should be boiled with his own pudding and then buried with a stake of holly through his heart. He should.
Uncle.
Nephew, keep Christmas in your own way. And let me keep it in mind.
Keep it? But you don't keep it.
Let me leave it alone, then. Much good may it do you. Much good has it ever done you.
There are many things from which I might have derived good, by which I have not profited. Christmas among the rest. And therefore, Uncle, though it has never put a scrap of gold or silver in my pocket, I believe it has done me good, and will do me good. And I say, God bless it.
You're quite a powerful speaker, sir. I wonder you don't go into Parliament.
Don't be angry, Uncle. Come, dine with us tomorrow.
I'll see you damned first.
Uncle.
Good afternoon.
I am sorry for you, Uncle, with all my heart. We have never had any quarrel to which I have been a party. And so I'll keep my Christmas humor to the last. A Merry Christmas.
Good afternoon.
His nephew left the room without an angry word, stopping at the outer door to bestow the greetings of the season on the clerk, who, cold as he was warmer than Scrooge, for he returned them cordially. In letting Scrooge's nephew out, however, he let someone else in.
Scrooge and Marley's, I believe. Have I the pleasure of addressing Mr. Scrooge or Mr. Marley?
Mr. Marley has been dead these 7 years. 7 years this very night.
At this festive season of the year, Mr. Scrooge, it is more than usually desirable that we should make some slight provision for the poor and destitute.
Are there no prisons?
Plenty of prisons.
And the union workhouses, are they still in operation?
I wish I could say they were not.
The treadmill and the poor law are in full vigor.
Both very busy, sir.
I'm glad to hear it. I don't make merry myself at Christmas, and I can't afford to make idle people merry. I help to support the establishments I have mentioned, and those who are badly off must go there.
Many would rather die.
If they would rather die, they'd better do it and decrease the surplus population. Good afternoon, sir.
Oh.
At length, the hour of shutting up the counting house arrived.
You'll want all day tomorrow, I suppose, Cratchit.
It's quite convenient, sir.
It's not convenient, and it's not fair. If I was to stop half a crown for it, you'd think yourself ill-used, I'll be bound.
Once a year, sir.
A poor excuse for picking a man's pocket every 25th of December.
Oh.
But I suppose you must have the whole day. Be here all the earlier next morning.
Oh, thank you, sir. Thank you, sir.
His melancholy dinner in his usual melancholy tavern, and having read all the newspapers and beguiled the rest of the evening with his banker's book, went home to bed. He lived in chambers which had once belonged to his deceased partner, Jacob Marley. There was nothing at all particular about the knocker on the door, except that it was very large. Scrooge had seen it night and morning during his whole residence in that place. But when he put his key in the lock, he saw in the knocker Marley's face. As Scrooge looked fixedly at this phenomenon, it became a knocker again. He did pause with a moment's irresolution, and he did look cautiously behind the door. But there was nothing on the back of the door except the screws and nuts that held the knocker on. And so he closed it with a bang which resounded through the house like thunder. Darkness is cheap, and Scrooge liked it. But this night, before he shut his own heavy door, he walked through his rooms to see that all was right. Quite satisfied, he locked himself in and sat down before the fire to take his gruel. His glance happened to rest upon a disused bell that hung in the room. It was with great astonishment and with a strange, inexplicable dread that as he looked, he saw this bell begin to swing. It was Marley. Marley, in his pigtail, usual waistcoat, tights and boots, and with a kerchief bound around his head and chin. The chain he drew was long and wound about him like a tail. It was made of cash boxes, keys, padlocks, ledgers, deeds, and heavy purses wrought in steel.
What do you want with me?
Much.
Who are you?
Ask me who I was.
Who were you then?
In life, I was your partner, Jacob Marley.
Can you sit down?
I can.
Do it, then.
You don't believe in me.
No, I don't. You may be an undigested bit of beef, a blot of mustard, a crumb of cheese, a fragment of an underdone potato. Humbug, I tell you, humbug!
Do you believe in me or not?
I must. You are fettered? Why?
I wear the chain I forged in life. I made it link by link, yard by yard. I girded it on of my own free will, and of my own free will I wore it. Is its pattern strange to you? Or would you know the weight and length of the strong coil you bear yourself? It is a ponderous chain.
Old Jacob Marley, speak comfort to me, Jacob.
I have none to give. Hear me, Ebenezer Scrooge. My time is nearly gone.
I will, but don't be hard upon me, Jacob, pray.
I am here tonight to warn you that you have yet a chance and hope of escaping my fate. You will be haunted by three spirits.
Hmm? Is that the chance and hope you mentioned, Jacob?
It is. Expect the first tomorrow, when the bell tolls one.
Couldn't I take them all at once and have it over, Jacob?
Expect the second on the next night at the same hour. The third upon the next night on the last stroke of 12.
The spectre took its wrapper from the table, bound it round its head as before, rose and walked backwards towards the window. Scrooge became sensible of confused noises in the air. The spectre, after listening for a moment, joined in the mournful dirge. Desperate in his curiosity, Scrooge ran to the window. The air filled with phantoms, wandering hither and thither, moaning as they went. Everyone wore chains like Marley's ghost. Some were linked together, none were free. Whether these creatures faded into mist or mist enshrouded them, he could not tell, but they and their spirit voices faded. And Scrooge, closing the window and being much in need of repose, went straight to bed and fell asleep. When Scrooge awoke, it was so dark that he could scarcely distinguish the transparent window from the opaque walls of his chamber. Marley's ghost bothered him exceedingly, and he remembered on a sudden that he had been warned of a visitation when the bell tolled one.
A coat of arms. Half past. A quarter to. The hour itself.
And nothing else. Are you the spirit whose coming was foretold to me?
I am.
Who are you?
I am the ghost of Christmas past.
What has brought you here?
Your welfare.
Oh, I'm much obliged, spirit.
Your redemption, then. Take heed. Rise and walk with me.
As the words were spoken, they passed through the wall and stood upon an open country road with fields on either side.
Good heaven! I was a boy in this place. I was a boy here.
The spirit gazed upon him mildly.
Your lip is trembling. And what is that upon your cheek?
Nothing. A pimple, that is all. Lead me on, spirit.
They left the high road by a well-remembered lane and soon approached a mansion of dull red brick. The lonely boy was reading near a feeble fire, and Scrooge sat down and wept to see his poor forgotten self.
What is the matter?
Nothing. I wish there was a boy singing a Christmas carol at my door last night. I should like to have given him something. That's all.
The ghost smiled thoughtfully and, waving its hand, said,
"Let us see another Christmas."
Although they had but that moment left the school behind, they were now in the busy thoroughfares of a city. The ghost stopped at a certain warehouse. They went in, and at the sight of an old gentleman in a Welsh wig, Scrooge cried out in great excitement,
"Why, it's old Fezziwig! Bless his heart! It's Fezziwig alive again!
Yo ho there, Ebenezer, Dick! No more work tonight, my boys! Christmas Eve, Dick! Christmas, Ebenezer! Clear away, lads! There's some lots of room here! Hilly, old Dick! Cheer up, Ebenezer!"
It was done in a minute. In came a fiddler with a music book and went up to the lofty desk and made an orchestra of it and tuned like 50 stomachaches. In came Mrs. Fezziwig, one vast, substantial smile. In came the three Miss Fezziwigs, beaming and lovable. In came the six young followers whose hearts they broke. In came all the young men and women employed in the business. In they all came, anyhow and everyhow. There were dances, and there were forfeits, and there were mince pies, and plenty of beer. When the clock struck 11, Mr. and Mrs. Fezziwig took their stations, one on either side of the door, and shaking hands with every person individually, wished him or her a Merry Christmas.
a small matter to make these silly folk so full of gratitude.
Small? He gave great happiness.
What is the matter?
Nothing. I should like to be able to say a word or two to my clerk just now. That's all.
My time grows short. Come.
Again Scrooge saw himself. He was older now. He was not alone, but sat by the side of a fair young girl in whose eyes were tears.
The golden idol has displaced me. If it can cheer and comfort you as I would have done, I have no cause to grieve. May you be happy with your dream. I could not be.
Spirit, show me no more. Conduct me home. Why do you delight to torture me?
These were shadows of things that have been. That they are what they are. Do not blame me.
Leave me. Take me back. Haunt me no longer.
Scrooge turned upon the ghost and wrestled with it. It did not resist, but he, overcome by an irresistible drowsiness, had barely time to reel to bed before he sank into a heavy sleep. Awaking in the middle of a prodigiously tough snore, Scrooge found his bed the very core and center of a blaze of light, which was more alarming than a dozen ghosts. At last he began to think that the source of this ghostly light might be in the adjoining room. So he got up softly and, shuffling in his slippers to the door, opened it. It was his room. There was no doubt about that. But walls and ceiling were so hung with living green that it looked a perfect grove, from every part of which bright, gleaming berries glistened. Heaped on the floor were turkeys, geese, game, poultry, barrels of oysters, juicy oranges, luscious pears, immense 12th cakes, and seething bowls of punch. And amongst them sat a jolly giant, glorious to see.
Come in! I am the ghost of Christmas present.
Spirit, conduct me where you will. I went forth last night on compulsion and learnt a lesson which is working now. If you have aught to teach me, let me profit by it.
Touch my robe.
Scrooge did as he was told and held it fast. And perhaps it was the good spirit's own kind, generous, hearty gesture and his sympathy with all poor men that led him straight to Scrooge's clerk's house. For there he went and took Scrooge with him, holding on to his robe. And on the threshold of the door, the spirit smiled and stopped to bless Bob Cratchit's dwelling with a sprinkling of his torch.
Is there a peculiar flavor in what you sprinkle from your torch?
There is. My own.
Would it apply to any kind of dinner on this day?
To any, kindly given. To a poor one, most.
Why to a poor one, most?
Because it needs most.
Now they saw Mrs. Cratchit, dressed out but poorly in a twice-turned gown, but brave in ribbons, which make a goodly show for sixpence. And now two smaller Cratchits, boy and girl, came tearing in, screaming that outside the baker's they had smelt the goose and known it for their own. In came little Bob, the father, with at least 3 feet of comforter, exclusive of the fringe, hanging down before him, and his threadbare clothes darned up and brushed to look seasonable.
Why, bless your heart alive, my dear, how late you are. Sit down before the fire and tell me, how did Tiny Tim behave?
As good as gold, and better. He gets thoughtful. He's seen by himself so much, and thinks the strangest things you ever heard. He told me, coming home, that he hoped the people saw him in the church, because he was a cripple, and it might be pleasant for them to remember upon Christmas Day who made lame beggars walk and blind men see.
Oh.
Soon the active little crutch was heard upon the floor, and in came Tiny Tim, escorted by his brother and sister to his stool before the fire. And while Bob compounded some hot mixture in a jug with gin and lemons, Mrs. Cratchit, looking slowly all along the carving knife, prepared to plunge it in the breast of the goose. But when she did, and when the long-expected gush of stuffing issued forth, a murmur of delight arose all round the board, and even Tiny Tim beat upon the table with the handle of his knife and feebly cried, "Hurrah!" Bob said he didn't believe there ever was such a goose cooked. Its tenderness and flavor, size and cheapness were themes of universal admiration. Eked out by applesauce and mashed potatoes, it was a sufficient dinner for the whole family. The youngest Cratchits in particular were steeped in sage and onion to the eyebrows. At last the dinner was all done, the cloth was cleared, the hearth swept, and the fire made up. Then all the Cratchit family drew around the hearth, and Bob proposed,
"A Merry Christmas to us all, my dears.
God bless. God bless us, everyone."
"Spirit, tell me if Tiny Tim will live."
"I see a vacant seat in the chimney corner, and a crutch without an owner. If these shadows remain unaltered by the future, the child will die."
No.
"What of it? If he be like to die, he had better do it and decrease the surplus population."
Scrooge hung his head, overcome with penitence and grief, but raised it speedily on hearing his own name.
"Mr. Scrooge, I give you Mr. Scrooge, the founder of the feast."
"The founder of the feast, indeed. I wish I had him here. I'd give him a piece of my mind to feast upon."
"My dear, the children. Christmas Day."
"An odious, stingy, hard, unfeeling man is Mr. Scrooge. But I'll drink his health for your sake and the day's, not for his. Long life to him. A Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year."
Scrooge beheld a solemn phantom, draped and hooded, coming like a mist along the ground towards him.
"Are you the ghost of Christmas yet to come? You are about to show me things that have not happened, but will happen in the time before us. Is that so, spirit?"
The upper portion of the garment was contracted for an instant, as if the spirit had inclined its head. The scene changed to a dark room with a bare, uncurtained bed, on which there lay a something covered up. Scrooge glanced towards the phantom. Its steady hand was pointed to the head.
"Spirit, this is a fearful place. Who is the man?"
The ghost of Christmas yet to come still did not speak, but conveyed him to a churchyard, walled in by houses, overrun by grass and weeds. The spirit stood among the graves and pointed down.
"Answer me one question. Are these the shadows of the things that will be? Or are they shadows of things that may be only?"
The ghost, immovable as ever, pointed downward to the grave by which it stood. Scrooge crept forward trembling, and following the finger, read upon the stone of the neglected grave his own name, Ebenezer Scrooge.
"No, no, spirit, no. I am not the man I was. I will honor Christmas in my heart and keep it all the year. Tell me, I may sponge away the writing on the stone."
In his agony, he clutched the robe and caught the spectral hand. It sought to free itself, but he was strong in his entreaty and saw an alteration in the phantom's hood and dress. It shrunk,
collapsed and dwindled down into a bedpost. Yes, and the bedpost was his own. The bed was his own. The room was his own. Best and happiest of all, the time before him was his own to make amends in.
Oh, 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 Jacob Marley, heaven and Christmas time, be praised.
Churches rang out the lustiest peal Scrooge had ever heard. Running to the window, he opened it and put out his head. No fog, no mist. Clear, bright, jovial, stirring cold. Golden sunlight, sweet fresh air, merry bells.
Hey, boy! What's today?
Boy, Christmas Day!
Christmas Day! I haven't missed it after all. Do you know the poulterers in the next street but one at the corner?
I don't know, sir.
Oh, an intelligent boy, a remarkable boy. Do you know whether they've sold the prize turkey that was hanging there?
What? That one, as big as me?
Oh, what a delightful boy. It's a pleasure to talk to him. Yes.
It's hanging there now.
Is it? Well, go and buy it.
Walk out?
No, no, no. I'm in earnest. Go and buy it and tell him to bring it here. Come back with the man and I'll give you a shilling. Come back with him in less than 5 minutes and I'll give you half a crown.
The boy was off like a shot.
I'll send it to Bob Cratchit's. He shan't know who sends it. It's twice the size of Tiny Tim.
He dressed himself all in his best and at last got out into the streets. The people were pouring forth, and Scrooge regarded everyone with a delighted smile. He had not gone far when, coming towards him, he beheld the portly gentleman who had walked into his counting house the day before.
My dear sir, how'd you do? I hope you succeeded yesterday, and a Merry Christmas to you.
Mr. Scrooge?
Yes, that is my name, and I fear it may not be pleasant to you. Allow me to ask your pardon. Oh, and will you have the goodness to accept
Bless me, Mr. Scrooge, are you serious?
Not a farthing less. A great many back payments are included. Will you do me that favor?
I don't know what to say to such mutiny.
No, don't say anything. Come and see me. Will you come and see me?
I will indeed.
Oh, thank ye. I'm much obliged to you. Thank you 50 times and bless you.
He went to church and walked about the streets and watched the people hurrying to and fro. He had never dreamt that any walk, that anything, could give him so much happiness. In the afternoon, he turned his steps towards his nephew's house. He passed the door 12 times before he had the courage to go up and knock. But he made a dash and did it.
Fred? Who's that? Tis I, your Uncle Scrooge.
Why, bless my soul.
I've come to dinner. Will you let me in, Fred?
Let him in? It is a mercy he didn't shake his arm off. He was at home in 5 minutes. Nothing could be heartier. His niece looked just the same. So did the plump sister when she came. So did everyone when they came. Wonderful party, wonderful games, wonderful happiness. But he was early at the office next morning. Oh, he was early there. If he could only be first and catch Bob Cratchit coming late. That was the thing he had set his heart upon. And he did it. Yes, he did.
Hello? And what do you mean by coming here at this time of day?
I am very sorry, sir. I am the army time. I was making rather merry yesterday, sir. It's only once a year, sir. It shall not be repeated.
Now, I tell you what, my friend. I am not going to stand this sort of thing any longer. And therefore... And therefore, I am about to raise your salary.
Bob trembled and got nearer to the ruler. He had a momentary idea of knocking Scrooge down, holding him, and calling to the people in the court for help and a straight waistcoat.
A Merry Christmas, Bob! A merrier Christmas, my good fellow, than I have given you for many a year. I'll raise your salary, and we will discuss your affairs this very afternoon over a Christmas bowl of smoking Bishop Bob. Make up the fires and buy another coal scuttle.
Scrooge was better than his word. He did it all and infinitely more. And to Tiny Tim, he was a second father. He had no further intercourse with spirits, but lived upon the total abstinence principle ever afterwards. And it was always said of him that he knew how to keep Christmas well. May that be truly said of us, and all of us. And so, as Tiny Tim observed, God bless us, everyone.
Through the house, not a creature was stirring, not even a mouse. The stockings were hung by the chimney with care, in hopes that St. Nicholas soon would be there. The children were nestled all snug in their beds, while visions of sugar plums danced in their heads, while Mama in her kerchief and I in my cap had just settled our brains for a long winter's nap. When out on the lawn there arose such a clatter, I sprang from my bed to see what was the matter. Away to the window I flew like a flash, tore open the shutters and threw up the sash. The moon on the breast of the new-fallen snow gave a luster of midday to objects below, when what to my wondering eyes should appear but a miniature sleigh and 8 tiny reindeer, with a little old driver, so lively and quick, I knew in a moment it must be St. Nick. More rapid than eagles his coursers they came, and he whistled and shouted and called them by name.
Now Dasher, now Dancer, now Prancer and Vixen, on Comet, on Cupid, on Donner and Blitzen, to the top of the porch, to the top of the wall, now dash away, dash away, dash away all.
And then in a twinkling I heard on the roof the prancing and pawing of each little hoof. As I drew in my head and was turning around, down the chimney St. Nicholas came with a bound. The stump of a pipe he held tight in his teeth, and the smoke, it encircled his head like a wreath. He had a broad face and a little round belly that shook when he laughed like a bowl full of jelly.
He was chubby and plump, a right jolly old elf. And I laughed when I saw him, in spite of myself. A wink of his eye and a twist of his head soon gave me to know I had nothing to dread. He spoke not a word, but went straight to his work and filled all the stockings. Then turned with a jerk and laying his finger aside of his nose and giving a nod, up the chimney he rose. He sprang to his sleigh, to his team gave a whistle, and away they all flew like the down of a thistle. But I heard him exclaim ere he drove out of sight, "Happy Christmas to all, and to all a good night."
We wish you a merry Christmas, we wish you a merry Christmas, we wish you a merry Christmas, and a happy new year.
You've been listening to The Night Before Christmas, with music and carols from the BBC Concert Orchestra and the Stephen Hill Singers, conducted by Ashley Lawrence. A Christmas Carol was narrated by Monica Dickens, with Timothy Bateson as Scrooge, Jack May as Marley's ghost, Jonathan Oliver as Scrooge's nephew, and Peter Acre as Bob Cratchit. William Eadle played the ghost of Christmas Past and Mr. Fezziwig, Bernard Brown the ghost of Christmas Present and a charitable gentleman, Elaine Claxton, Mrs. Cratchit and the young girl, and Graham Blockie, Tiny Tim and the boy in the street. The Christmas story, according to the Gospel of St. Luke, was read by William Eagle. The poetry was Mistletoe by Walter de la Mare, Christmas by John Betjeman, and A Visit from St. Nicholas by Clement C. Moore. The poems were read by Graham Blockie, Elaine Claxton and Bernard Brown. The programme was produced by Anthony Cherry and Carolyn Smythe.